Every episode of this podcast is about true things that have happened at some point or another on this planet. Each episode is different than the next, and they are each centered around stories that are odd, outlandish, or of the occult. This podcast will include foul language. This podcast may also include themes of graphic content such as murder, rape, or gore. Listener's discretion is advised.
Hello and welcome to episode 15 of Seven Circles. I am Autumn and this is...
English Dan.
Today we have a haunted, ghosty story.
So the story itself is haunted?
Yes.
How?
You'll find out.
Huh. Okay. Also, it's rainy and stormy here, so the dog is not outside. You might hear some barks. Bark, bark.
Bark.
Bark. Bark.
This one is a history episode. It's a story that spans many centuries, but don't worry, it won't take that long to read. Hopefully.
We can but hope.
But hope.
I hope for but all the time.
In between Venice and Lido lies a small island called Poviglia.
How small is it, Autumn?
17 acres. Central Park in New York covers 843 acres. Now that's a big fucking park, but still this island is just a 50th the size of Central Park.
A 50th?
If you fly over this island in a helicopter, you can see that it's broken up into three different landmasses. The smallest is a man-made fort that is octagonal in shape. The middle, biggest chunk of land, is a natural island full of forest and shrubbery.
Shrubbery?
Yes, shrubbery, with a few random structures dotted across it. The third landmass is a sliver of natural island located on the other side of the middle piece. It is also lush and green, and from above you can't see any man-made structures on it. So you have the large... middle island, flanked by the octagon and the sliver.
Sliver.
I really love that word. I also liked the movie came out in the 90s starring that Baldwin guy and that Kim one Basinger. Chick. Nope, it wasn't Kim Basinger.
It definitely was Kim Basinger.
Kim Basinger was not in Sliver, it was the other chick.
It was fucking, what's her face, Thingy Stone. Sharon Stone.
Yes.
Was it? No, I'm yes. Fucking sure it was Kim Basinger.
You are incorrect. It was Sharon Stone.
Google break. So as I said, William Baldwin and Sharon Stone.
So the first mention of the island being populated was sometime around 421 AD. People from nearby lands used Poviglia Island as a refuge from barbarian invasions, specifically the Huns.
Why did he say it like that?
The Huns.
And why would people need refuge from the Huns? I freaking love Hunnies.
Not those kinds of Huns, dear.
Aww.
So, the Huns were a group of nomads who literally came out of nowhere. When they first started to appear, they were in small packs, and they never really got together to form one big tribe until a guy named Attila came along and was like, safety in numbers, but actually was really like, incursions in numbers. And these guys all got together under Attila's lead and were just attacking everyone, even the Roman Empire. The people who escaped to Poviglia were left undisturbed by the Huns because the island was small and easily defendable, and the Huns' main form of warcraft was cavalry. They were badass horse masters and would use their horses to just barrel into enemies with brute force.
Kind of like I do in Red Dead.
Exactamundo, sir. So the little island would have been more trouble than what it was worth to them, so the Huns just left them alone.
Nice Huns. So, in 1348, the island was used to house victims of the bubonic plague. At this time, the plague was killing one out of every three Europeans, so it made sense to have a place to quarantine the sick and try to stop the spread of the disease. In fact, this is where the word quarantine came from. The victims of the plague were ordered to stay for 40 days on the island, and 40 is 40 in Italian. Many Italians met their end on Pavilia during the plague. They built a bridge connecting the large island and the sliver island, and this is where they burned the bodies. We're talking about tens of thousands, in fact, well over 100,000 humans burned on Pavilia, their ashes scattered into the soil.
In 1379, Venice came under attack from the Genoans. The Republic of Genoa was a medieval maritime republic on the northwestern Italian coast. I'm not sure why they attacked Venice. I'm not a fucking historian, and that's not why we are here.
You're so aggressive.
Yeah, I don't understand why I'm so aggressive. Dan, maybe I need some mental health therapy or something.
Ooh, we could get you some electroshock therapy.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Yeah, maybe a full frontal lobotomy, okay. That'd be good.
Coming soon.
Oh, yeah.
So, at this time, the island was evacuated, and the people were sent to live somewhere else. The island remained vacant for 200 years.
So, the plague bearers were just sent back out into the masses? Or they were sent some other quarantine zone? Because maybe the Genoans were super smart and this was an early form of chemical or germ warfare.
No, I think by this point, regular, healthy Italians had moved back onto the island. So, at this point in history, the island only consisted of the large middle section and the sliver.
Sliver.
In 1380, Venetian soldiers built the third addition to Pavilia, the octagonal fort. It was made to be used as a defense system against enemy ships, and it worked. Venetians went on to build 5 more octagons in different locations. All civilians had been evacuated from the island the year before, so Pavilia became a military outpost for a while. In 1776, the island came under the jurisdiction of the public health officials, and they started to use it as a checkpoint for all goods and people coming and going to Venice by ship. In 1793, 2 of the ships brought with them to Pavilia the Black Plague and thusly transformed the island, once again, into a temporary confinement station for the sick humans.
Yay!
The Black Plague lasted a very long time. The bubonic plague, Black Plague, and Black Death are all the same disease. It started in 1346. The origin of this plague is unknown, but it was first documented in Crimea. From there, it traveled on the fleas, who were chilling on the black rats, who lived on Genoese ships.
Fucking Genoans.
And the Genoese were, as we said before, a maritime republic. This means that their main source of livelihood was their trade ships. This means that they had a lot of ships with a lot of rats traveling all over the fucking place.
In 1805, Napoleon Bonaparte, that's Napoleon, not his more famous brother Joseph, declared the island to be the permanent residence of anyone in nearby lands who contracted the plague. If Venice locals died in Venice itself, their bodies would be taken to Pavilia to be disposed of. If you don't know what the Black Death was like, well, lucky you, because today you're going to learn. So the ancient times were pretty filthy. Nobody really understood the importance of hygiene, so shit like the bubonic plague thrived in the downright horrid conditions of large populated cities and towns. A lot of humans walking around back then often had fleas. Fleas and any other blood-sucking insect were the main source of transmission of this plague. Warning, no eating during this part of the podcast. Orta made a salad while writing this part, but she's a sick little puppy, so she was fine.
I'm fine.
If you contracted the Black Plague, these were the symptoms that you would most likely experience.
High fever and chills. Pains in your tummy-wummy, arms and legs. Severe headaches. Large swollen lumps in the lymph nodes called buboes.
Buboes.
Typically in the groin that will fill with pus and leak. Who doesn't want pus-filled lumps leaking from the groin?
Me.
Oh.
I don't want that.
Well, you know. Your skin might become gangrenous and turn black. You might lose a finger or a foot. I don't know why it's just those extremities, specifically. I mean, you could lose anything, right?
Yeah.
Nose might fall off, your dick might fall off, I don't know. Do you think anyone's ever lost their dick to the plague?
Yes.
Huh, harsh. Swollen tongue, compulsive vomiting, which can only be more fun due to the swollen tongue. You begin to cough up blood, and this is when you know that you will not be leaving the island of Pavilia. Although, of course, the plague goes on to this day, so I guess you might be anywhere when you discover that your dick's gonna fall off and you're about to die.
So, from 1793 until 1814, the island was used as a quarantine station. People that came to the island with the plague usually never left. In 1814, the plague began to taper off, but in the end, the Black Plague ended up killing 25 million people globally, and an estimated 160,000 of them died and or were burnt on the tiny island of Povilia.
160,000?
On a 17-acre plot of land.
Wow!
Yes. From 1814 until 1922, the island was vacant yet again. Nobody wanted to use it for anything because of its history. Locals refused to use it for agriculture since the ground was half soil, half ash of the dead diseased. The island was also said to be haunted by all of the souls who died there. That's a lot of souls in a really small area. The island was even offered to some monks, but they were like, nah, we good.
Their god wouldn't protect them, huh? Well, I guess he also unleashed the plague in the first place, so I see their point.
Yeah. So in 1922, they converted all of the structures on the island into a mental institution. No sane person wanted to live there, so the Venetians were like, I know, let's put the crazy people there. So, you're mentally ill, right?
I don't think I want to talk about that in such a public forum, Autumn.
This isn't about you, Dan.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You're like 16 years old. Your parents don't know what to do, and they have their hands full with their other 10 kids. So they send you to the Povilia Mental Institution. Like, your brain is not working right, and you know it's not, but you don't really know why. And your own parents, who you thought loved you, are just going to send you away to a haunted island to be locked up? You promise to be good, but your parents can't handle the constant rocking back and forth and the self-harm and the night terrors and outbursts.
But the cats keep the demons away, Autumn.
They actually do. It's a fact. So you arrive on the island a few days later with nothing but a small suitcase. But this is taken away from you as soon as your parents float away on the boat. Rough hands grab you by the arms from both sides, and you're escorted inside the looming building. You're forced to strip down, shower, and change into a pale gray uniform like a prisoner.
I'm guessing this isn't like a Star-Lord hosing down, right? Like, far less orange and dignified and sexy.
Is that a reference to something?
Guardians of the Galaxy?
Oh, I fall asleep every time I watch that movie.
What? Even in the Chris Pratt hosing down scene?
I've probably slept through that because I don't recall it.
Wow. I mean, you're missing out, dude.
Not really into Chris Pratt.
I mean, he buffed up for that movie, man. He's not like the tubby dude that he was in Parks and Rec.
Are you into Chris Pratt?
I mean, not in that sense, no. Maybe kind of a bro crush.
How adorable. Then you are given a shot, even though you're not behaving badly at all. In fact, you are quieter and more still than usual, but out of the corners of your eyes, you see shadows that are more than shadows. They have features like faces that are forever screaming, and you are so quiet and still. The nurses in the shadows escort you to your cell, and the shot starts to wrap around you like a warm embrace, and nothing matters anymore.
Opiates.
Before your nurses leave the room, you whisper to them, I see the dark ones in the corridors, through the windows and behind the doors. But they just laugh and walk away.
The dark ones are coming for you, little girl. They are waiting, biding their time. And when you least expect it, they will take you. Take you away to the other side.
Spoopy!
So spoopy!
So, it is said, and I have it on good authority that this is said about most mental institutions such as this one, and I suppose of that time, that patients were frequently tortured and experimented on. Sometimes they were tortured to death. Dr. Damian Nikolovich was the headmaster of the asylum. During his reign at the hospital, many patients told him and the staff that they were seeing ghosts. So the good doctor did what most doctors did to mental patients during this time.
Lobotomy!
Yay!
What's a lobotomy? Nobody asked. Well, Dan is going to explain.
Doctors in ye olde times had a hard time treating patients who were mentally ill. Not that much has really changed, let's be frank. Anyway, broken bones or a sore throat were much easier to diagnose and treat. A lot of mental disorders did not even have names back then, so proper diagnoses were impossible. Doctors were like, look, their brains are sick. We should just open their skull and wiggle things about and see what happens. And so they did. And they usually made people worse or just killed them in the process. So then the doctors were like, what if we don't have to operate on the patient to get to the brain? What if we just go in through the eye hole? And so keyhole surgery was born. I don't really know if that's true, but this was probably one of its earliest forms.
It was.
And it kind of makes sense. You can't go in through the ear, albeit they probably did try that first with somewhat less than ideal results. You could probably go in through the soft palate of the mouth. You could most certainly go in through the nose.
They did.
But if you really, really want to put your already unstable patient at ease, what better way than approaching their eye with a long needle?
And so they started doing that. Some of the first lobotomies were done using an actual ice pick. It goes into the corner of your eye hole. Your eyeball remains intact.
Oh, good. I mean, that's some kind of a consolation prize here, right?
Yeah. Through there, the ice pick can easily reach your frontal lobe. And this is the area of the brain that affects most of your behavior. The surgery causes most of the connections to and from the prefrontal cortex, which is the anterior part of the frontal lobes of the brain, to be severed. This results in the patient becoming calm and docile when they were previously displaying constant episodes of violence or aggression. This practice was done without any use of anesthesia or concern for sanitation.
While this may sound barbaric, and it most certainly was, I feel like we moved from the Dark Ages to the 19th and 20th centuries rather quickly here. So to be clear, the first lobotomy was performed in 1880 by some Swiss fella called Gottlieb Burkhardt. And just 15 years later we had x-rays. So it was only a short period in history where we were just rooting around blind in people's brains. He destroyed parts of the frontal lobes in patients suffering from schizophrenia and other auditory hallucinations.
What? No, not now they'll hear us. No, she'll die later, as we planned. Stop it! You ruin everything!
Are you hearing voices again, Daniel?
No. No.
Are you talking to Tedithin?
No.
Good old Tedithin.
The fuck is Tedithin?
I don't know, it's the name I made up for your imaginary voices.
You don't need to make them up. I'll make them up. Involuntarily.
Okay. So, I could not find a lot of information about the asylum. But here are some of the things that were documented and actually happened at other asylums in this era, just to give you an idea of what life would be like in the Povilia Asylum. Institutions like this were often poorly staffed.
I think that's in terms of both quantity and quality.
This resulted in patients being neglected severely. There is one case in a West Virginia asylum that reported a patient being locked in solitary, only to be forgotten about and starved to death.
Forgotten in massive quotes, I suspect.
Sometimes patients were not being fed nutritious diets. Often they would lack vitamin B and niacin, resulting in a vitamin deficiency that causes dementia and eventually death. That's right. You are brought to a mental institution for depression, and you wind up with dementia as well.
You're welcome.
There was a treatment called photostimulation. You would be locked in a dark room with a machine that flashes lights in your face in random sequences. This would usually result in seizures or shock. Patients claim that this treatment was the same as torture. Speaking of torture, electroconvulsive therapy, or ECT, more commonly known as electroshock therapy, was also abundant at these hospitals. There is a reason that institutions like these no longer exist in this day and age.
I mean, they do, though. Let's go off on a little tangent here. Here's some stats for you. A survey of psychiatric practice in the US in the late 1980s found that an estimated 100,000 people received ECT annually. In just 13 of the 50 states, the practice of ECT is, current day, regulated by law. In the mid-1990s, in Texas alone, ECT was used in about one third of psychiatric facilities and given to about 1,650 people annually. Usage of ECT has since declined slightly. In 2001, ECT was given to about 1,500 people aged from 16 to 97 in Texas. In Texas, it is illegal to give ECT to anyone under 16, which is a shame because it could have been a good abortion loophole. ECT is more commonly used in private psychiatric hospitals than in public hospitals, and of course, minority patients are underrepresented in the ECT statistics. ECT is used to this day. In the UK in 1980, an estimated 50,000 people received ECT annually, with use declining steadily since then to about 12,000 people per year in 2002. It is still used in nearly all psychiatric hospitals, with a survey of ECT use from 2002 finding that 71% of patients were women and 46% were over 65 years of age. 16% were treated without their consent. ECT is still used to this day. And here's where it gets really interesting and much more like the oldie days institutions. There are other types of electricity-based therapy. Here in the US, I shit you not, they give kids backpacks with 12-volt batteries and electrodes attached to their legs. Teachers or doctors can then shock them when they misbehave, the likes of threatening to hit another student or patient, running away, screaming or swearing, refusing to follow direction, etc., etc. These are issued by court order. That's the law! They are not removed. Kids will have these electrodes for years or even decades. There's a whole ass story about these at the Judge Rotenberg Educational Center in Canton, Massachusetts, which has been one of the most controversial institutions for people with disabilities in the country for over half a century. Just last year, in 2021, the FDA banned use of these devices on future patients, because, you know, such a forward-thinking country, so modern. However, those already approved for therapy are still being treated with these devices, and as I understand it, they will not be taken off until certain legal proceedings about the device's use in general have reached a conclusion. So, yeah, go on, carry on, Autumn. Let's get back to the olden barbaric days in which the mentally unwell were still mistreated.
One night in 1930, Dr. Damian Nikolovich threw himself off of the island's bell tower. Was he driven mad by the ghosts that haunt the island? Or did he suffer from the guilt of having tortured so many people? They say that his ghost joined the ranks of the hundreds of thousands of plague ghosts that haunt the island to this very day. The bell from the tower was removed many years ago, but people in Venice and Lido claim that they still hear it chime occasionally. The doctor's ghost is said to be walking the wards, taking notes, or in the area of the bell tower prone to uncontrollable laughter and screams, and frequently throwing himself from the top, disappearing into silence before he hits the stones beneath. The mental institution was later shut down and transformed into a nursing home for elderly and homeless Venetians. But that did not last long either, and the buildings were all shut down in 1968.
1968. Once
again, Povilia Island was devoid of humanity. Some people in the 1980s tried to use the island for agriculture, but that didn't work out at all, so they left.
You'd think with all that ash, the land would be super fertile.
I don't know, I'm not a farmer, man.
Look, Daddy, I'm a farmer!
In 2014 and 2015, a few private groups tried to buy the island and use it for tourism, but each time their projects fell through. The island is still vacant to this day. The surviving buildings on the island consist of a cavana.
What's a cavana?
Like a bar type area.
Isn't that a cabana?
Oh shit, that is a cabana. What the fuck is a cavana?
I don't know, it's why I asked.
I don't know. A church, a hospital, the asylum, the bell tower, and housing and an amenity.
I just really want there to have been a bar for the sick people.
A cabana.
It's like, ah, my dick's falling off and I'm going totally insane, but at least I get to drink my way through it.
Yeah, so there's still some buildings there, okay.
But wait, what about the housing and administrative buildings for
yes,
the staff? Yes,
those.
So let's just recap here. A cabana.
Cabana.
Which may or may not be a bar. A church, a hospital, the asylum, the bell tower, and housing and administrative buildings for the staff.
The bell tower is the most visible structure on the island and dates back to the 12th century. It belonged to the Church of San Vitale, which was demolished in 1806. The tower was reused as a lighthouse.
I'd have reused the tower as another fucking bar.
Cabana! The island consists of multiple plague pits. An estimate published by National Geographic suggests that over 100,000 people died on the island over the centuries and were buried in plague pits. Others suggest that the number is closer to 200,000.
200,000!
200,000!
That's the thing about this island. There is not a lot of information on the internet about it. And what information there is, it's all confuddled.
I like that word.
Discombobulated?
Yes. I struggled to get the exact timeline of the island's history because different websites had different dates. Only after I found several that matched up could I draw my own conclusion. The island has been featured on the paranormal shows Ghost Adventures and Scariest Places on Earth. Locals tell people not to visit the island. They say that it's haunted. They also say that when an evil man dies, he wakes up there. In fact, it's illegal to visit this island. It's probably illegal to go there because the soil is so corrupted with plague corpse goo.
Sounds like a Munda's paradise.
Nasty.
Giggity.
This did not stop YouTubers, though. I watched a walkthrough of the island by a YouTuber called Brennan Taylor, and also by a channel called Yes Theory, and I watched a bunch more.
Allow us, listeners, if we may, to talk you through a walkabout of the island. A talkabout.
The island is not far from Venice at all. You get there by boat. If you're lucky, you can hire a water taxi to take you, and hope that they not only come back for you later, but also that they don't call the authorities. When you arrive at the dock, you are greeted by metal fencing with no trespassing signs plastered on them. If you walk around a bit, you will probably find a hidden entrance tucked somewhere behind a bush where the fence has been cut away.
I do enjoy a hidden entrance tucked away behind a bush. The buildings are old and decrepit, falling apart from years of decay and unkept conditions. Graffiti covers the walls in most of the rooms, suggesting that you are not the first one to risk exploring this abandoned place. And you definitely won't be the last. Be careful on the stairs, some of them have begun to crumble, despite being made from stone or marble. When you are walking across the gardens, be mindful of the soil on which you tread. Hundreds of thousands of people over the centuries have been either burned or buried on this tiny island. You are walking on a mass grave. Vines and trees have wrapped themselves around the bones of these old buildings. In some places, nature has even burst through walls and windows, like the island is taking itself back. Or maybe the dead are coming alive through the trees to destroy the structures that were their final homes and resting places. All furniture and art have long since been looted and destroyed. Occasionally, though, you will see an old rusted heater lying on the ground, a built-in tiled bathtub, its porcelain yellowed with age, a toppled-over shelf, old metal bed frames.
You walk through the forest and come to an old wooden bridge. The bridge is simply made, wide enough to push or pull a cart over. The bridge is still intact, so go ahead and walk over it. On this part of the island is where most of the plague victims were burned and buried. So do you even want to set foot on this part of the island?
Fuck yeah!
If you do, you will be walking on an ancient burial ground. You hesitate for a minute, and then continue on. This sliver of the island is lush and beautiful. There is ivy crawling from the floor up to the trees and then up to the canopies. There really is not much else to see on Povilia. It's an island with a tragic history. You don't see any ghosts or spirits during your few hours on the island. Maybe you feel uncomfortable or sometimes even nauseous, but other than a sense of foreboding, you don't really see anything paranormal. When your water taxi arrives at the dock, you let out a sigh of relief. They came back for you. Even though you didn't see anything here on the island that might spook you, you certainly don't want to be stranded here overnight. After all, you just spent a few hours here, in the daylight.
That was a very nice description, Autumn. Very well written. Some of your finer work, I would say. And as somebody who has done a fair amount of urbexing, that's urban exploration, and has been in many an abandoned asylum and other buildings of interest, you evoked it very well. I liked it. Good job. And I definitely do recommend visiting these places at night, though. It's way better.
Okay, so I watched a clip of the Ghost Adventures adventure on Povelia. Let me start by saying I don't watch this show. I have tried, but I find it to be unbelievable and corny. The show reminds me of when I was like 12, and our group of friends would go hang out in the cemetery at night, and there would be like one or two people in the group pretending that they for real saw something over there by the tree. But we all knew that they were just seeking attention, but at the same time, we were really pumped to see a ghost. So we just kind of fed off of each other's energy. That's Ghost Adventures. Anyways.
Yeah, you didn't sell it for me. I'll probably give that one a miss.
It's so bad. So in the clip, the guys are about to go across the bridge onto the sliver of the island where the plague victims were mostly cremated and burned in giant pyres. Immediately upon entering this section of the island, the main dude is like,
"Ooh, do you feel that?
And
do you smell that too?"
And he just looks off into the distance.
You can't record yourself looking off into the distance. I don't think it works like that. This is not an audio visual.
Oh, it's not?
No. No.
They said that they smelled a strange odor, as if something was burning. And then the main dude starts yelling into the forest.
Is anybody out here?
And of course, you hear a voice in the distance and everyone is like,
"Ooh, is there anybody out there?"
And then the main dude just starts digging into the ground. I have watched a bunch of walkabouts on YouTube and none of them did this. So he pulls up a pile of dirt on his machete and flings the dirt into the air, and you can see that it's mostly ash mixed into the earth, even with the poor quality night vision. And then he finds a piece of bone. What are you doing? Ghost adventurers are asking for a curse, man.
Yeah, and that bone was definitely not planted there at all. Not in any way. No chance.
No, listen, though.
No way.
That's what I would normally think on their normal, like, episodes, but this island literally, I mean, it's 100,000s of people on this tiny piece of island. Of course you're going to find bone. Of course.
Yes. There's no argument.
My silence argues for me. Anyway, maybe they'll go ahead and build a whole-ass neighborhood on it.
They're here. R.I.P.
What?
That little girl's dead.
Yeah, for like 30 fucking years. Who's still sad about it?
I am.
Oh, okay. Rest in
peace. She was lovely.
Lovely.
So this is being filmed at night with night vision. The quality is never really great on this show. And the main dude says that the locals are constantly seeing white shadows and apparitions walking around on the island.
The locals, who never visit the island, constantly see apparitions walking around on the island? Right.
You can see the island from Lido and Venice. It's like, in eyesight.
In eyesight?
Yeah, you can see it.
Is it within spitting distance?
No, but it's within baby kicking distance. As the words came out of my mouth, I was like, no.
That's perfect. I mean, I often measure distances by drop kicking babies. It's like, oh, this one is only 3 baby drop kicks away.
No, it's like 12 Ariana Grandes away.
I would love 12 Ariana Grandes. Oh my god.
Now I kind of want to watch this whole episode, but I don't know where to find it. I could only find clips, and I don't have access to the network that they are on.
Oh, that's such a shame.
Yeah, they're on the Travel Channel, by the way.
Yeah, I will not be subscribing.
Anyways, so that's all we have about this island. It's sad and scary, and I wish I could find out more. Dan, how the hell are we going to wrap this up? Because I'm all tapped out of good endings, apparently.
Honestly, I kind of feel like you were about 7 episodes ago, but... But you are? I don't know. Figure it out. You're the brains behind this operation. You see what I did there? Brains behind operation lobotomies. Anyway, all that talk of munging, I'm off for a Sherman. Goodbye, everybody.
What's a Sherman?
It's rhyming slang, Autumn.
Okay, so...
like a Sherman tank. What rhymes with tank?
Shank.
That one might do to one's self.
Spank. Wank?
There it is.
Ah, there it is. We got there in the end.
Yep. Munge wank, munge wank, munge wank, munge wank, munge wank. Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're going to record a new intro and a new outro to these pods very soon.
Yeah.
We haven't written those yet, so I'm just going to fucking wing it today, I reckon. Yeah, what do you reckon?
Let's see if we can do it in my memory, okay.
Yeah, but what, you want to do the same old one, but try and remember it?
Thank you for listening. Your donation support can help elevate our podcast. please subscribe to our Patreon.
I don't know what to say that you missed so much.
Find us on social media.
Oh my god.
At Seven Circles Pod.
Yeah.
That's the number seven circles, like the shape, podcast. You can just find it.
Original music by Caroline Gates.
No, that's the art.
Oh, fuck. Art by Caroline Gates and original music by Null Machine. I remembered it. There you go. Those guys are awesome. They do real art, not like our podcast. No. We like you guys. Thanks for listening. Please don't stop. And
I can't stop.
Stop.
Jump.
In the name
Jump
of love.
Down, open up shop.
Before oh, you pray. Oh. What was That's the song that we said we were going to do at the end of an episode?
Shit. I don't know.
What's her name?
Turn around.
Every now and then I feel a little bit lonely and I wish you'd come around.
Turn around.
Every now and then Autumn can sing in key. She just does it, I do it often.
Turn around.
Bright eyes.
Every now and then I fall apart and I need you now tonight. And I need you now forever. Okay, bye.
When we're not recording, we're actually pretty good at that. That was just horrendous. I'm so sorry.
Forgive all!
Hi, then.
What?
Show us your boobs.
No.
Oh, standard.
I did not. It's even inside me.